I used to enjoy going to pubs on my own and sitting at the bar with a book, getting a little food and drink. Maybe chat with the barkeeper, others or not, but not with an intention to flirt. I know, women doing that, what do we expect? This is about how other dudes enable nice guy rhetoric. Trip to my hometown and my favorite historic pub doing such. Few people there, just relaxing with my book, food and wine. Dude down the bar sends me a glass of wine via female barkeep. I decline politely. He tries to send it again. I decline a little more assertively with, I don't accept from strangers and I don't need another glass. Dude gets loudly vocal about how rude. Male barkeep and owner says loudly to the guy, hey, it's not your fault. You're just being a nice guy. She's just being a bitch. Paid and never went back. I loved that place. I don't sit at the bar anymore. Another one. I had a nice client on my phone sex site who wanted to date me. He was always there when I was having a bad day to message back and forth. He had kinks I initially wasn't comfortable with, but did sometimes for him because he was so kind. It turned out he not only betrayed my confidence, like things I told him that I didn't want anyone to know, he actually had a voice changer and was talking to me using the voice changer and literally was several of my problem clients just so that he could comfort me about them.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hi. I'm Zahn Valines, and this is the Liberating Motherhood Podcast.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm Zahn's husband.
And today we are going to talk about nice guys, how men weaponize nice guy status, how the belief that a guy is nice often causes a woman to overlook problematic behavior, what we can do about all of this. If you want access to more, go to liberatingmotherhood.org. The podcasts are up there. The transcripts are up there. I have show notes, merchandise. What else? Bookshop reading lists, links to the Substack. Everything that you could possibly want about feminism and motherhood is on the website. So I hope you will check it out. And let's talk about nice guys, Jeff. Jeff, what's a nice guy?
It's someone who uses labels to excuse their behavior.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it boils down to. You know, what does nice mean? For me, nice is kind of like the lowest grade compliment I have for someone when I don't know what else to say. So, for example, my dad was recently at an event for my high school, and he told me that he ran into someone that, like, I barely knew in high school. And this person remembered me a lot. And so I felt obligated to have some filler and to say something. So I said, oh, yeah, he's a nice guy. You know, it's about the most neutral thing that you can say about somebody because it doesn't actually mean anything. Okay, so nice guys are basically, this is something men use to describe themselves. It's an identity rather than a set of actions. So we're not saying that there are not men who are nice, that there are not men who are kind or feminist or decent. When we're talking about nice guys, we're talking about men who see themselves as nice and who think more about how they deserve to be perceived as nice than what it actually means to be nice. And when they are accused of bad treatment of women, they will weaponize this nice guy status. But I'm so nice. You know, you should concern yourselves with the real bad guys because I'm a nice guy. I'm a feminist and an ally. I'm on your side. You know, we often see these guys basically implying to women that they are above criticism because they are so nice, apparently unaware that one of the ways that you actually become nice is by accepting other people's criticism and feedback on your behavior. This is often a way of making a man's objectively unreasonable behavior seem fine, so that then the man can turn around and stigmatize the woman's reaction to his behavior. So it looks like, you know, what we saw with our opening vignette, where the guy sends her a drink and she says, no, thank you. This is a reasonable reaction. And then he calls her a bitch because he's such a nice guy.
Which bartender is, did.
The bartender did.
They ganged up on her.
Yeah, they ganged up on her together.
Because he sent it back to her
right.
A second time.
Yeah.
He got aggressive.
Exactly. So, no, if your response to criticism is that you're nice, you're not being nice then. You're not one of the good ones. That's not what the good ones do.
It sounds a lot like the defensive reactions that you get to accusations of someone saying or doing something racist.
Yeah. I had another reader who shared her story where her partner was beating her, and he beat her so badly that he almost paralyzed her. And the moment that triggered this was that she implied that he was not a nice guy. And the whole time that he was beating her, he was telling her what a nice guy he is. And it's like, what does this even mean? And I think what men mean when they say nice is they mean, I'm above reproach. You're not allowed to criticize me. And I think that women need to start, when they hear men saying this, reframing it as this way. As soon as a man says, I'm a nice guy, what he's really saying is,
don't criticize.
Yeah, women can't criticize me. You know, I had another reader who left a comment on one of my posts talking about her partner as wonderful and loving and giving, and then itemizing a number of really objectively terrible behaviors. And a couple of people tried to talk to her about this and say, like this is abuse. And she just kept saying, no, he's a nice guy. He's one of the good ones. You know, it's like, once we put a man in this category, we've decided that he can't leave that category, that we then just have to adjust our expectations, that whatever the man in that category does is reasonable because he's nice. And once a man has been labeled nice, he can't be labeled unnice.
Yeah, it's just another way of people avoiding actually addressing the behaviors that are in front of them.
Yeah. I see this a lot with men who contact me, like all of whom perceive themselves as nice guys. And they often contact me like seeking absolution and affirmation of their nice guy status, seemingly like hoping to weaponize what I say against their partners. And then when I don't give them that absolution, they get really aggressive, like immediately.
Yeah. And it's the same for, it's really easy to be a kind of chameleon and say the right things for a while. It's really easy to learn some of the feminism buzzwords, use them in a conversation. And then as soon as there's a conflict, revert to this, well, I do this, hyper-defensiveness, deflection, and all of a sudden, you know, this just becomes another shield used against answering for their actual actions.
So I want to talk about some, like, subgroups of, like, nice guys and see if you're familiar with this type, Jeff, okay, or not. So there's the guy who's just overtly abusive. And a lot of these guys, and I think that this is something that's important for women to know, is that abusers never see themselves as abusive. They're never like, oh, I'm going to go home and abuse my wife because I just love oppressing women.
Right.
They always see their abuse as warranted. You know, we also see this with abusive parents. They think they can abuse their kids into better behavior. They're genuinely worried about their kids' well-being and future, and they just think that you have to abuse them into being better. And it's the same with men. You know, they think that they can abuse their wives into doing what they want, and she deserves it because she emotionally abused me or she cheated on me or whatever. You know, anytime you see someone justifying something bad they did with something the other person did, like that's a flag that this person, you know, thinks abuse is justified or potentially thinks that. I think it was Lundy Bancroft who said that men who say that their partners are abusive actually have a much higher risk of themselves being abusive than men in the general population. And that this is a major red flag for like a man being abusive.
Yeah.
Is if he says his ex was abusive.
Right. Definitely.
So, you know, overtly abusive men will talk about how she's so abusive and so mean, often like really vaguely, or the complaints they will give won't make sense, or they'll just label her as crazy.
They also love borderline personality disorder.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you label a woman as crazy, then people just accept whatever you do to her. We have this notion of women as like volatile and irrational and flighty. Even though it's actually men doing that, like men are the ones, you know, killing people who try to leave them and stalking people trying to leave them and beating their partners.
Shooting people and committing almost all of the violence.
Yeah. Women are the ones living in this society and mostly just like functioning okay. So then there's the kind of guy who sees feminism as like an intellectual exercise and not a real practice. So feminism is like a social status signifier. Feminism as a way to get attention.
Mm-hmm.
Feminism is something he can weaponize against women. Oh, you can't criticize me. I'm a feminist and an ally.
Mm-hmm. And I can justify what I'm doing. I can throw a word salad at you to explain why this isn't what you're saying it is.
I've read Andrea Dworkin, too. Don't come at me about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so nice. Look how feminist I am. Then there's the guys who think that not being physically abusive of women make them nice.
Yeah, just like people who think that because they aren't running around saying overtly racist things and using racial slurs means that they're not racist.
Yeah. You know, we see this a lot in feminist circles. And, you know, I think that men who are physically abusive do a great job enabling men who are abusive in other ways because they make those men look good. Often, even to women, they look good. I have so many readers who are in severely abusive relationships where the man stops just short of hitting her, but he does everything else. And because he's not physically violent, she thinks he's better than her bad ex who hit her.
He is not wearing a KKK hood and marching in the street. Therefore, he is not racist.
Yeah. So, you know, all men are enculturated into patriarchy. No man gets a free pass. No man gets to be permanently put in the nice guy pile and, like, not be questioned.
Why would you want a free pass?
Right. Like, why don't you want to learn and grow?
Yeah.
Why don't you want to be the best possible person you could be?
Why don't you want to listen to the person who you claim to want to spend the rest of your life with?
Yeah. So, you know, pushing back is an ongoing project. Feminism is not about proving your knowledge or your superiority or, you know, getting some, like, stamp of approval from someone. Feminism is like a lived practice, and it begins at home in your family and with how you treat your family. And so I think one of the most important takeaways that men need to hear is that if you are not regularly accepting that your behavior is problematic and correcting it, you're not a nice guy. Because all of us, like all day, every day, make bad decisions. And we all in our relationships do things that harm our significant others. And if you are a member of a privileged class, you're going to harm people on those privileged class lines sometimes. And the only way that you stop doing that is by listening.
Yeah, and the only way you have a good relationship is by listening.
Right.
It's like, do you want to have a good relationship or do you want to just have someone who thinks you're a piece of shit, who, you know, is planning to leave, who's stashing money away, who's scared of you, who, you know, I don't understand why anyone would want that kind of relationship, because all that you have to do is like listen and be willing to admit fault and change, which if you're not willing, imagine learning anything else. Imagine if you're a guy and you're going to a coach for something, anything, a sport. You know, you're 30 years old and you've decided you're going to become a basketball player. Okay, we'll just accept that that's, you know, some the childish kind of bullshit that men get into. And you hire a coach and go in and they're like, you know, you're jumping, you know, you're establishing your pivot foot too early. Do you say, how dare you? How dare you tell me that? That's not right. You know, I've been playing basketball since I was a kid. I've read all these books. I want, you know, is that what you do if you want to improve? No, of course you don't. So why would you handle your relationship that way?
I like the coach metaphor because the person you're with is like your coach for what they need from you. And I think that like what happens a lot is that women become coaches for like being less sexist. Hey, I need you to do this differently. Can you please do this differently? And men become coaches for just accepting misogyny. So like women's complaints are often like he doesn't do an equitable share. You know, the sex is bad or coercive. He's punitive and authoritarian with the kids. And he, you know, doesn't give me equal access to money. And then like the man's main complaint is like she has expectations of me and I don't think she should have expectations. And also I want her to be a fuck doll for me.
Right. And that's no kind of relationship. And if you actually have a relationship, then you can say things to your wife where you're like, excuse me, my love. I found your debit card in the front yard today after I found another one in the backyard. Could you please be a little bit more careful with your debit cards?
So, okay. just background on this.
I'll give it to you when the show is done. It's in the car.
Thank you. I was wondering where it was. We have a child who is a pickpocket. Well, I also have like a problem with just like leaving my debit cards places. I'm not going to put all the blame on her. But our toddler has started like pickpocketing me. I was at Target with her the other day and we're scanning things and she's learned how to use a scanning gun. So she's scanning things. And then I go to get my card to pay and I can't find it. And she goes, oh, I'm going to get this for you. And she reaches down her shirt into her diaper and pulls out my debit card. And I have no understanding of like when or how she got it, except that I know that she's been generally like kind of grabbing at my butt during the day. So at some point during the day, she like stuck her hand in my pocket, snatched my debit card and stuffed it in her diaper. And this is not the first time this has happened and it won't be the last. I do also throw my debit cards places, but I'm going to give her like 50% blame. The card in the backyard chewed up by the dog.
And if you're not a defensive asshole who doesn't let their wife air grievances, you could say, my love, it sounds like you're deflecting and trying to place blame on a toddler.
I agree. It's true. It's true. So, okay. So kind of I want to expand on like the coaching metaphor.
Yeah.
Because I think that what a relationship is, and I stole this a bit from Dan Savage, who I love. You should listen to Dan Savage. He's wonderful and thoughtful about a lot of things. And
wrong about some things.
And wrong about a lot of things, too. But I really like him. So Dan Savage talks about like a relationship as something independent of yourselves that you build together. And I completely agree. And I think that most people agree that that's kind of what a relationship is. The problem is that in most heterosexual relationships, the men are refusing to participate in the building.
Right.
She's saying, okay, we need to like lay down another floor of Legos. And he's like, what? We're not adding any more Legos. We're not going to change anything forever. We're just going to have these three Legos and you're going to have to deal with those three Legos.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, she's like, one of the Legos is loose. Can we like move it around?
He says, no, I'm going to go play basketball.
Yeah.
Because I want to fulfill my childhood dream. I want to pretend that I'm still a child and I have endless opportunity in the world and I'm going to just keep being a kid and forget about the fact that we have a life and a family and children and bigger responsibilities.
So like, how does this relate to the nice guy thing? The way it relates is that everyone who's in a relationship has to continuously build. The person that you're going to be with is many different people over the course of your relationship together. They're going to have different interests and different problems and all of that. And so, you know, you have a child and you have to rebuild your expectations for the relationship. You have another child and maybe the expectations you have with the first child aren't working so well. So you have to like tear that down and start something new. You start a new job, you lose a job, you come into money, you lose money. You know, you develop new hobbies. Maybe one of you starts thinking you're bi. Maybe one of you wants to open up the relationship. There are all kinds of things where you have to, rather than treating this person as an enemy, come together and figure out what you're going to build. And instead, what happens in most heterosexual relationships is the guy says, I'm nice. I don't have to build anything. And so you just end up with this like pile of Legos on the ground that never becomes what it could have been.
You know, one thing I think Dan Savage does get wrong is this whole, you know, he's big on opening up the relationship. This is a gay man talking about a gay man's experience, and he can say, I know what hetero people are like. He might know what hetero men are like.
Right.
But he doesn't have a fucking clue about what it's like to be a woman.
Right.
And what it's like to be a woman in a heterosexual relationship, what it's like to be a married woman. He doesn't have a clue because if he did, he wouldn't so flippantly think, oh, we can just open this relationship.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what it's like to be a mother with an abusive husband.
Right.
And so a lot of what he says is valuable, but he's got huge blind spots. And I don't say much of anything about gay relationships because I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
And so to pretend that that can be mapped, that the sexual dynamic in a homosexual relationship can be mapped onto our societal clusterfuck of heterosexual marriage, I think is, I think he's missing a lot. Anyway.
Yeah. So it's around the time this podcast comes out, I have a Feminist Advice Friday question coming out where a woman's husband asked to open up their relationship. And they had all the like standard heterosexual relationship problems.
Was a younger woman at work that he fancied.
There's no specific woman
okay.
being volunteered. And it doesn't seem like he really wants an open relationship. It seems like he wants to threaten her. So she's been asking him to change. He's been refusing. She's been not having sex with him. And he says, well, I need sex somewhere, so I want to open up the relationship. Hmm. Now, if he posed this question to Dan Savage, he might pose it as, you know, my wife has shut me out sexually.
Right.
And I love her and I want to stay together, but I want to open the relationship.
And she won't let me.
Yeah. And Dan Savage would say, you should do what you need to do to stay married if you love this person. And framed that way, he might be right. But what is left out of all of this is that he's not done anything to stay married. He's wielding this as a threat. And in a healthy relationship, if he really wanted to open up the marriage, what it would look like is, okay, if you want to open up this marriage, I need a foundation of trust and safety. And that begins with you honoring my wishes. So we need to start with that. And then after you've started with that, then maybe we can talk about meeting that additional need, which is less important than like the basic foundation of trust and safety. And so again, this is like an example of how, well, but I'm nice. And so she should have sex with me.
Mm-hmm.
Harms him because now he's not getting sex and he's not going to get the open relationship he wants. And harms her because she's just asking him, please co-create this good thing with me. And he's saying, I don't have to. I'm nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems about right. And ultimately, all the nice guy thing is it's just another defense. And it's not even a good one. And if it wasn't that, it'd just be something else.
But I think it is effective, weirdly, because our standards for men are so low. And so, like, if I... You know, this isn't happening. But like if I tell a random stranger, like, you know, you're abusing our child or you're abusing me or like I don't feel safe with you, you know, they'd be like, but I've seen him be nice to the kids. He right. seems like such a nice guy.
I just can't believe that.
Yeah, exactly. Because if we see a man like smile, then we assume that he's nice. And so we give men the benefit of the doubt.
For sure.
And men demand it. They demand the benefit of the doubt. They demand that we see everything they do through the gentlest, kindest possible lens, no matter how much evidence there is that it's not gentle and kind. They act like insiders to feminism. They act like, well, of course I'm a feminist. Of course you should assume I'm a feminist. Of course I know what feminism is and should do. They act like any bad behavior that they are having must be an accident. You know, it must be neurodivergence. We just assume that, like, if a man is actively defying what's important to his partner, it must be because of something outside of his control. They treat conflict as abuse. You know, if someone says they have a problem with your behavior, they've done something bad by having a problem with your behavior. They make women feel guilty about confrontation. We saw that in a recent podcast where, like, a woman wanted to respond to people needlessly praising her husband, but, like, she wanted to be kind. And it's like, we just framed it as women having a problem with anything is unkind and confrontation is always wrong. And then all of this together works to make us disbelieve women because we have this baseline assumption that most men are nice and most men want the best for women, even though the evidence is overwhelming to the contrary, that most men are not good to women and most marriages are not good for women and most men are actively undermining their partners and ignoring their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff.
Yes.
Are you a nice guy?
Yeah. I'm nice. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Depends. It's the standard lawyer answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to, there are men who are good men. And what makes them good men is like the choices they make every day. And a man who has previously been a good man can become like not a good man. Like it being a nice guy means that you have to accept the possibility that something you did wasn't nice. You have to accept the possibility that maybe you're not so nice. You have to accept the possibility that misogyny is influencing your behavior.
Well, like you told me recently that I was being an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Generally.
Mm-hmm.
Had been an asshole for a couple of weeks. And I accept that because most of the time I feel like an asshole because I'm grumpy, not to you, of course, yeah. But just to the world.
And well, I think that's like an important point too, is like people often ask, like, what does a healthy relationship look like?
Right.
And I think a lot of people, especially those who are like really in the feminist world, but who have also never had a feminist relationship, think that it's both of us behaving perfectly, you using all of the feminist terminology and like all of this. But what it really is like each of us making mistakes and being willing to correct them. Like that is the cornerstone of a healthy relationship, is like, you hurt me.
Right.
And the response is, I don't want to do that again. Tell me how to fix it.
Yeah. And the real thing there is like, okay, you're being an asshole. I could, there's two ways to say to use the exact same information. I could say, I'm sorry. You're wonderful. I'm sorry I'm directing that at you. Here is some evidence about other things that I'm upset about. Mm-hmm. I'm not offering this as an excuse.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to give some context to what has been bothering me. And I'm not saying, I'm not offering those things as like, I'm not going to change or anything like that.
He means other things, like things in his life influencing his behavior. Yeah, not like, oh, you made me do this.
Work, mostly. Yeah. Mostly work. You know, I have a stressful job, lots of death, et cetera. But I'm not using that as an excuse. Like, that doesn't justify me being short or whatever. And I'm also not going to, like, debate whether I was or wasn't.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I could point to instances in which I was nice during that time span. And, of course, she could point to instances where I was not during that time span.
What matters is how your partner feels.
Well, and no one has – it's – you don't have a transcript of everything that's happened. –
And there's not an objective reality.
There isn't, right, exactly.
Like, and Jeff's behavior toward me during that time that I said he was being an asshole to, like, 99.9% of people would have been like, oh, he's such a nice guy.
Right,
and
for
because,
sure.
Still, like, even when Jeff was being an asshole, like, I would have praised him as a husband because he is a good husband. And, like, Jeff's version of asshole is not the typical heterosexual abusive man's version of asshole.
Right. Sure, there's that. But, like, you know, it sucks to live with someone who's grumpy or, you know, short or absent-minded or not paying attention. That's the same thing as absent-minded.
I want to talk about the bed as like a really good example for how this plays out.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the background is...
Don't give too much information.
Yeah. So we have like a floor bed and we use like pillows as a headboard for reasons. And I tend toward like having back pain. So it's like always very important to me to have like the right sitting environment so that I don't like trigger it. And recently, one of our kids has been using the headboard as like a gymnastics like launching pad, the effect of which is that the headboard has like loosened behind the bed and the bed has moved steadily forward. So there's not a firm background to sit against. And I sit with her and do a lot of bedtime. And so like I'm in this bed sitting like quite a lot. And so I recently raised with Jeff, I was like, I need you to fix this. This is like a big problem for me. And was complaining like quite a lot about it because it was making my back hurt. And probably to a lot of people, it'd be like, wow, why is she complaining so much about this ridiculous headboard thing? That's crazy. That's insane. And, you know, Jeff could have responded, but I'm so nice. I'm helping her do gymnastics. And, you know, why are you so ridiculous with your standards for the house? And instead,
I was like, well, the grumpy me was like, okay, as soon as I have a span of time in which I can fix that, I'm happy to.
Right.
You know, which is true of our life, which is like, you know, often in a day, there is not 30 minutes to not have, you know, not be supervising a child or something, or, you know, making dinner or whatever it is. And so, but, you know, I wasn't like, that's ridiculous. It's just like, okay, you need that to be fixed. Like, let's figure out how to fix it.
But like from the outside, this is the sort of thing where like, you know, you could say to someone down the road, you know, and she divorced me over the headboard.
Right.
And she complained about the headboard for years. Isn't she a psycho? You know, leaving out the part of like, well, her back was hurting because of this easy fix I could have made. And that's kind of like the fake nice guy methodology of picking something she complained about, making it out to be unreasonable, never giving the context, and also just never accepting like my partner has needs that aren't mine.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even have to make sense to me. I don't have to understand why the bed being in the position it is causing back pain. I don't have to debate about that. I don't have to say that's stupid. I don't have to provide other solutions. It's just like, okay, this is a problem for you. We should fix it.
So I think at the core of this nice guy thing is the notion that men deserve the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
That we should assume good intentions until he proves bad intentions. And I propose that we flip this. And the best way that women can be safe in a misogynist society, and the best way that we can have a realistic appraisal of our partner's behavior, is to not give men the benefit of the doubt. To assume that a man is dangerous and problematic until he proves otherwise. And if he never proves otherwise, that means he never did anything that was nice. So he's not a nice guy.
Yeah, I don't understand why anyone would not approach men with that level of caution. I mean, that's how I just generally approach people, right? And it's not like I'm a particularly vulnerable person. It's just I don't trust anyone. I don't trust anyone, really, aside from you. You know, I trust my family to want to do the right thing, you know, to try to do the right thing, but to actually do the right thing. That's a level that it's impossible to reach until someone actually proves it to you over an extended period of time.
But women are taught to trust men, and we are taught that we're doing something wrong if we don't trust a man, that we're being mean or abusive. You know, for example, I prefer not to work with men. I prefer not to hire men, to have men doctors, because I just, every time I do, I just end up regretting it.
Right.
And, you know, people act like this is me being unreasonable and crazy. It's like 1 in 5 men admits to having beaten a woman. How many men have actually done it? You know, 40% of men say that they would rape someone given the chance. It's reasonable to want to avoid men you don't know. And it is very reasonable when talking about getting into intimate spaces with men to say, I need a lot of time to see. And one instance of being nice to a woman and one instance of correctly using feminist rhetoric is not enough. Like, that's not going to cut it. And, you know, it sucks to put that burden on women, but like, men aren't changing. They're arguably getting worse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we should be raising men to be different. We should be teaching men to be different. But that's, you know, people shouldn't rob other people. But that also, that's not going to change. And so you have to not, you know, flaunt your money. Yeah. It's not a great example, but you know what I mean.
So I would encourage women to view a man identifying nice as a red flag, not as a sign that he actually wants to be nice. Because people who actually make good choices understand that it's other people who get to decide if they're nice. Jeff just pulled out my debit card and handed it to me. Thank you.
You're welcome. I think that the notion of red flags is wrong. You're not looking for red flags. You're starting with a red flag.
Yeah.
Because the notion of a red flag like means that the presumption is in favor of trust.
That's true. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Jeff and I have talked a lot about kind of like the red flag thing and how making this list of like red flags and stuff causes it's just feels somehow incomplete. And I've not been able to put my finger on like what's wrong with this idea of red flags, but I think, Jeff, you just hit it. So say it again for the audience.
Well, looking for red flags means that your default is to trust somebody, and that should not be your default.
Yeah.
The default should be, I don't trust this person. What are they going to do to earn my trust? And it might be a semantic difference because ultimately you're just meeting someone and trying to judge their character. And red flags is really just like, what are markers of bad character that I should be aware of?
Mm-hmm.
So in part, it's just a semantic difference. But I think that there is also some truth to, you know, coming at it from the perspective of like, what should I watch out for that indicates a problem as opposed to this is a potential problem. What should I watch out for to indicate that it's not?
Yeah. And, you know, we can't control how men treat us, but we can control who we get into a relationship with. And we can control when we become adults, who we live with. And once we make those decisions, we lose a lot of control. And once we have kids with someone, we arguably lose like all our most control. And so it is so important to be skeptical at those points where we still have some control, where we can still say, like, I'm not going to date this person. I'm not going to move in with this person. I'm going to move out of this person's house. You know, if you see a red flag, but you think, oh, there's an exception here. Or, oh, but he's so nice. Just pause. Don't move to anything deeper. And if we do that, and if we treat men who behave in this way as like fundamentally unfuckable and unworthy of relationships with women, that is the only way that they have to change. That is the only thing ultimately that forces men to change. It has always been that way with social justice. It's been that way with racism, with, you know, overt racism only stopped when it became socially unacceptable. And I think that we, and
I mean,
yeah, it didn't stop, but like for a normal,
became like, more covert, maybe
for a normal, like professional person to use a racial slur is socially unacceptable now. And so, but we still use like gendered slurs all the time.
All the time. Yeah. When are we going to start treating the B word like with the weight and gravity that it deserves? Because that is a way of putting women in their place and saying you're less than men. Yeah. And
well, and we have this like framework of like women overreacting to things. We're constantly talking about women as like overly dramatic and overreacting. And the reason we have that is because it makes it easy to dismiss them. And, you know, I encourage people to push back on that when you hear it. You know, oh, she's crazy. Oh, really? What did she do that was crazy? Oh, she's abusive. What did she do that was abusive? Please be specific. Mm-hmm. And what you'll often find is kind of an amorphous hodgepodge that basically boils down to, she didn't like something I did. Mm-hmm. So we're going to leave it at that. I hope you guys liked this one. Please give us your feedback. Leave a review, like, comment, share as always. And if you have anything that you would like for us to cover in a subsequent podcast, please let us know. There's now a form on the website where you can submit vignettes to share for the podcast. And you can also submit Feminist Advice Friday questions. That's liberatingmotherhood.org. And we'll talk to you guys soon.